I am Paul Harris. Dan Strauss and Ian Geis are here with me, and Colin Jeffrey joins us now for the showbiz segment of the show, where we review the movies that are hitting the theaters today and get to some other showbiz stuff as well, including the Emmy Awards, which are going to be telecast on ABC on Sunday night. Hi, Colin. How are you?
Doing well. How are you today, Paul?
Good. We actually have three movies to get to, and since I have two and you have one, I'm going to go first.
That sounds good.
All right. The first movie today is called Snowden.
It's about a blizzard.
No, it's about Edward Snowden.
That's my line.
Your mic was off. I had to do it for you.
This was directed by Oliver Stone, who for many years was known for his conspiracy theories, mostly because of movies like JFK and also because of his appearances on the old Larry King live show on CNN, where he would spout any conspiracy theory he could get his hands on. Now, of course, thanks to the internet, you don't need Oliver Stone. You wanted a conspiracy theory? Just Google conspiracy theory, and good luck having anything to do for the rest of the weekend. However, and there's always a however in life, Oliver Stone is finally back to reality. And it's interesting that he's doing it with a movie about a real-life guy who told the world about what we thought was a conspiracy theory that, yes, the government is listening to you and watching you. It was Edward Snowden who revealed that the NSA and the CIA were listening in on everyone's phone conversations and emails and texts. In this movie, Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays Edward Snowden. Last good movie I saw him do was called Man on Wire, which was the Philippe Petit story of the man who went up on the high wire between the towers of the World Trade Center some 40-plus years ago. And I thought he was very good in that. He is excellent as Edward Snowden. If you've ever heard Snowden speak, when you watch Joseph Gordon-Levitt do it, he's got it down. He's Meryl Streepian in his imitation of Edward Snowden here. He's that good. The movie tells not just the late year stories of Edward Snowden's life, but goes back a decade before that. From 2004 to 2013, we hear and see the story of young Edward Snowden, who in the years after 9/11 wanted to serve his country. Considered himself a patriot, was actually a pretty conservative guy, volunteered for the Army Reserves, and then he developed some leg problems. In the movie, it seems like he gets broken legs. In real life, I think he just had shin splints, but whatever it was, he couldn't serve in the Army because of those leg problems, even in the Army Reserves. But he still wanted to serve, and so he went and applied for a job as a computer programming guy at the CIA. And he was a brilliant computer programming guy, almost hacker level. And that's what the CIA was looking for. But along the way, he discovered that the CIA was gathering a lot more information than the public knew. And that's where you follow the story of him. And at the same time, you see flash forwards to 2013, when he was in a hotel room in Hong Kong with journalists Laura Poitras and Glenn Greenwald and Ewan McCaskill. He was giving them the information he had gotten on the NSA computers and downloaded to a little thumb drive, which he had given them, which revealed all of this top-secret information about how our government was spying not only on Americans, but on foreign diplomats like Angela Merkel and others. It wasn't just that they were going after terrorists and people with terrorist connections. They were gathering petabytes of information on people all over the world who had no idea it was going on. And they even include in the movie how shocked Edward Snowden is as he discovers this, and even more shocked and horrified when he sees Michael Hayden, who was then the director of the CIA, going in front of a Senate committee and lying to Congress when he's asked by Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon, does the CIA spy on Americans? Is it gathering information on American phone calls, web browsing, emails, etc.? And Michael Hayden said, no, not intentionally anyway. When, of course, he knew that was a lie. And by the way, when you lie to Congress, isn't that a crime? Haven't people gone to jail for lying to Congress? No, this guy didn't. But back to Snowden. The movie is about him and his life, And you see quite a bit of that stuff that goes on in the hotel room, but you also see some of his personal life with his girlfriend, Lindsay Mills, who's played in this movie by Shailene Woodley. You may remember her name from the Divergent movies. She was in
Fault in Our Stars.
Yep. She's been in several movies in the last 5 years. 24 years old, terrific actress. And she's very, very good as Lindsay Mills in this movie. I think she might even be nominated for an Academy Award for supporting actress. Also in this movie, Melissa Leo as Laura Poitras, the documentarian who went into that hotel room in Hong Kong with Glenn Greenwald, who's played in the movie by Zachary Quinto, and Ewan McCaskill, who's a reporter for The Guardian, who was played by Tom Wilkinson. This is top-notch acting-level people here. Laura Poitras made a documentary about that called Citizen 4. She filmed it in the hotel room and told the story of what Edward Snowden had uncovered in that documentary, which went on to win the Oscar for Best Documentary of the Year, and it was one of my top movies of 2014. If you did not see that documentary, you should see this movie, Snowden, because it's very, very, very well made. Oliver Stone has a couple of cinematic flourishes in here that I didn't think were necessary to it, but Joseph Gordon-Levitt is so good in the lead role. And even if you did see Citizen 4, this fills in more of the story behind the Snowden's life story before they all ended up in that hotel room in Hong Kong and before he ended up having to go to Moscow, where he still is living in essentially political asylum there. This is Oliver Stone's best film in 20 years, bar none. I give it an 8.5 out of 10.
Wow.
Probably one of my favorite movies of the year. It's called Snowden.
Okay. And how long is the movie?
I hope it does well. It's a couple of hours.
Okay.
Very, very good. Now let's go to the other end of the spectrum. You saw a horror movie this week, Blair Witch.
Blair Witch. Not the Blair Witch Project, not Book of Shadows, the Blair 2, you know, Blair Witch 2. This is a direct sequel to the original Blair Witch Project from 17 years ago. And this movie revolves instead of around the original trio of characters who did not make it out of the Blair Witch Project at the end of that movie. This instead revolves around one of the characters from the first movie, Heather. We didn't know had a young brother who was 4 years old at the time. He is now older and believes he found online footage showing his sister in the Blair Woods. So he sets out with his friends to find his sister, see if she's still out there. They, of course, decide to film everything, and because one of his friends says, oh, I'm going to make you a documentary. It's a little hokey in that respect because you don't need a reason to film anymore. I have seen people film the most ridiculous things on their smartphones. Oh, I'm standing in line. Well, let's film this because it's thrilling. And
technically, they're not filming it. There's no film involved.
Taping. They are recording it. Okay.
I have to catch myself with this all the time.
Yes. So they are recording this trek to find his sister, Heather. It starts off very much the same. They're in a woods. They're trying to find their way to a site that no one seems to be able to find, this cabin, this house from the first one. And things start to go a bit sideways. It gets a bit hinky.
Okay, before you go on with the plot, I've got to ask you, did they do the shaky camera stuff that the original one did?
It's a little better just because cameras are better now. They all have, it's primarily shot from these earpiece cameras. It's like a Bluetooth video recorder that sits on your ear like a little microphone for your phone would.
Mm-hmm. Like an AirPod pod from Apple?
It's bigger.
Okay.
And less pretentious to buy than an AirPod.
But just as likely to get lost if
exactly,
you drop it.
Yeah. So it's less shaky because we have digital image stabilization and things built into our phones now. It has the same feel, though, where it doesn't quite look right. There's things that are just off, but it's much more polished.
Okay.
This go round. It's not actors shooting it. They're sort of being instructed, this is where you should shoot. It's not three people who've never acted before given cameras and saying, oh, go shoot this, as it was in the first one.
Oh, yeah.
So this has, it looks nicer. It's easier to see. There aren't as many like jumbly, I feel like I'm going to be sick moments. However,
and there's always a however in life.
There are still those moments. And if you don't like the found footage, I don't think this is going to change your mind because it still has those moments. There's one scene in particular that I think is a wasted scare. Something happens that is shocking and the camera moves off of it so quickly that you can't see what happened. I've talked to three other people who saw this. None of them picked up on this. I saw it, and they're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, this scene. They're like, oh, that's what it was. And it's a shame because you lose that with this found footage feel.
Hmm.
Another thing I want to talk about with this is horror movies have this, they have peaks and valleys, and it's to give the viewer time to catch their breath. But it's, you get something scary happens, then there's a lull, we have to have some exposition, move the story along, then something else scary happens, rinse and repeat, until maybe a slightly more intense finale. This says, oh, we're going to ignore that. Instead, what we're going to make is about 45 to 50 minutes of relatively, I'm not going to say dull, but uneventful footage, where you're never really scared.
Mm-hmm.
It'll, okay, that's creepy. And then the last 30 minutes, 25 to 30 minutes of this movie, right about the hour mark, it just switches into high gear and does not give you a moment to stop and think about this.
Like, okay.
At all.
I'm no movie expert.
Yes.
But I am going to say 45 minutes of dull footage probably kills a movie that's only an hour and a half long.
It doesn't kill it because if you're into the movie, they're explaining and they've got to set it up at first. And it's sort of the things you expect. It's the scenes you expect in a horror film or a found footage film. We have to establish all the characters and why do they have cameras and where are they going to go? And okay, let's get to the part that could be scary. And then there's, it's not that there's nothing happening. It's just that it takes 20 minutes of sort of setting everything up. And then when things start to happen, they're kind of minor. You're thinking like, well, this isn't as scary. Well, they're just saving it up to make you go absolutely nuts.
Mm.
I like being scared. It was too much almost because it was so intense for so long. I was sitting next to someone who said partway through the finale, they're like, I realized I was forgetting to breathe because it's so intense.
Wow.
If you're scared if you're claustrophobic, they got that for you. If you're scared of kind of being in the darkness and not being able to see what's around you, kind of agoraphobic, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, they're going to scare you that way.
Mm-hmm.
Jump scares, sort of tension. And it does all of this without any music, which in horror movies is an amazing feat. To make you scared without having that... like knowing the foreshadowing of something bad is going to happen.
Yeah.
This is just like, oh, we're going to scare you at any point. And it's because of these the finale that this movie is so much fun and it's so scary.
Wow.
But you can't overcome that slow build up to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like 2 years ago we talked about a movie, It Follows. It was an old-style horror movie, very reminiscent of the 80s, where it was a slow burn. But you were constantly, there was tension at points. This isn't that. It's just kind of, the beginning of the movie is just kind of like, eh.
Okay.
I didn't dislike it at all, but it didn't live up to the amazingly high expectations from the Blair Witch Project. Because I don't know if you saw that in theaters. Did you, Paul?
I never saw the whole thing. I watched about 15 minutes of it on TV and just decided it's not for me.
That's fair. That movie... was so good. And perhaps it was that I was into the online, looking at the website, and people didn't know if it was real or fake, and it had that whole added...
You were totally... You have to admit this. You were totally caught up in Blair Witch Fever from the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
And here's how I know it. You've been talking about this movie for 6 weeks.
Yeah,
you've been looking forward to seeing...
Yes.
Yeah, whenever we were talking about, are there any good movies coming out this fall? Well, Blair Witch, that was the first thing you always blurted out.
Yes. I was very excited for it. And it felt right. It felt like the old film, but more polished. And I'm not going to tell you, there's lots of twists in there. You have to pay attention. It does something. It adds a mechanic playing around with time. I'm not going to say anything, but it adds this mechanic to this whole series that makes me think there could be other of these movies.
Hmm.
Whatever direction they choose to take it, and I hope they keep giving it to new directors. This director was not at all associated with the first or second one, and so he got to add his own flavor to it. If you liked the first one, you will like this. If you never saw the first one, give this one a shot. If you don't like horror movies, don't go see this. Don't go see it. Because, again, I love them. That finale was, it was too much almost. I was starting to squirm in my seat.
Okay. So what do you give it on a scale of 10?
I give it a 7 out of 10. It was a lot of fun. I loved the end of it. I wish they'd spread it out a bit, maybe, and had a more traditional structure of, we're going to give you a minute to catch your breath, instead of just... Yeah.
All right.
Now, white-knuckling it.
The third movie that we have to review for this week is not Bridget Jones's Baby. Is that the name of the Bridget Jones's Baby?
Oh,
with Renee Zellweger playing the character she played a dozen plus years ago.
Yeah, it's called Bridget Jones Won't Die.
No, it's, no, that's the next
thinking
one.
On your
Bridget
part.
Jones's Baby. Yeah,
you would go see Bridget Jones Won't Die.
Yes,
that might have some found footage in it. Colin is there for that one.
Yes. Cyborg, but Bridget Jones.
Because we are all four guys. There's no sense in us reviewing a movie called Bridget Jones's Baby because the movie's not made for us. We're not the target audience.
No, it's not. She doesn't know who the dad is. In this one, she's now pregnant. Could it be the dashing Colin Firth or the
also dashing,
roguish but still dashing? I don't know.
Patrick, what's his name?
Yeah, I don't know.
From Grey's Anatomy, Patrick Dempsey.
There you go. The other generic, good-looking, brown-haired guy.
Yeah,
him.
Who in the room cares? I see no hands. We'll move on.
Now I'm going to say this: this movie's not for America. I don't think the second Bridget Jones. Did not do particularly well. $50 million budget, I think, we looked it up, and it did about $40 million locally to $220 million internationally.
Wow.
So this movie is not for us, and Renee Zellweger doesn't look like Renee Zellweger 14 years ago either, so I don't know how they explain that.
Isn't this supposed to be like England? Is she English in this or something?
Yeah. Yes.
Bridget Jones is an English character.
Yeah.
If there's one thing English people love, it's Texans doing them.
Yeah.
That's my conclusion based on the evidence.
Yes. Sorry. Okay.
All right.
My baby.
The dingo ate my baby. Oh,
that's Australian.
Oh.
Yeah.
Man.
That was Meryl Streep, A Cry in the Dark.
Yeah. I get them mixed up.
Based on a true story.
I know.
Yeah. our third movie this week is not a real life story like Snowden. It is not a horror movie like Blair Witch. It is a dysfunctional family comedy. Now,
how about my family?
Yeah. Dan, your family has to move up a few notches to become dysfunctional. Your family's looking up at the first rung saying, gee, I hope we can get up there sometime. Yeah. We're not going to get into the stories right now,
no.
But trust me.
Yes.
Now, when you think of dysfunctional family movies, you may think of pieces of trash from the past like, The Family Stone or Home for the Holidays or August, Osage County or This Is Where I Leave You or I could go on and on and on. The good news is The Hollars, which is our third movie this week, H-O-L-L-A-R-S, is actually funny and is actually a pleasure to watch. It was made by John Krasinski, who you may know from The Office. Mm-hmm. You may also know from a wonderful movie he made several years ago where he and Maya Rudolph are a couple who are about to have a baby. She's quite pregnant, and they are traveling to various parts of North America to find where they want to live to raise their child. And they go and they visit people who are friends or family who live in those places. And Allison Janney has a fantastic piece in that movie that just kind of steals the whole thing. But that was a wonderful little independent movie called Away We Go. In The Hollars, John Krasinski directed it and also stars as John Holler, who is the son of Sally and Don Holler. Those two, the parents, are played by two of our greatest character actors, Margot Martindale and Richard Jenkins. These are actors who I like so much.
Jenkins?
Yes, Jenkins. I would watch these two read a menu. That's how much I respect their work. And when they're in a movie or a TV show, usually means there's going to be great work ahead. You may know Margot Martindale from Justified.
Oh, my God. I was just going to say that. She's so great in Justified.
She was fantastic in that one season that she was in. And Richard Jenkins has been in about 200 different movies. If I showed you a picture of him, you go, oh, that guy. Yeah. The movie starts with Martindale tumbling to the floor of the bathroom in their house. And her husband comes in and says, what are you doing on the floor? Come on, let's go. We got to get up. And their son, the other son, not the John Krasinski one, but the one who's played by Charlton Copley, who was in the movie District 9 about a decade ago and unfortunately hasn't found anything good since then. He's good in this. He plays the other son. He's living at home because business has not been good for him. And so he walks in and says, Mom, are you okay? Dad, don't you realize Mom's hurt here? The curling iron she was using is burning her arm. Come on, we got to get her to the hospital. It turns out that Mom has a brain tumor and needs to have it operated on. Now, that sounds like, oh, we're setting ourselves up for a terms of endearment kind of weeper here. No, it's actually the beginning of a pretty good comedy. John Krasinski part, comes into town and eventually is joined by his very pregnant girlfriend, who's played by Anna Kendrick. This is a terrific cast. Josh Groban is in this cast as well as the guy who is dating Copley's ex-wife. There's a guy by the name of Charlie Day who has some very funny scenes in this movie as a male nurse at the hospital.
He was in Horrible Bosses, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Pacific Rim. I like Charlie Day a lot.
He's very funny in this. He dated Gladys Knight.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
What did they call themselves when they were out?
Gladys and Charlie.
Yeah. Yeah, Gladys and Charlie. Yeah.
There's even a short scene here with Mary Kay Place, so I haven't seen in a movie in about 15 years. There is some really funny stuff going on. Martindale and Jenkins are wonderful. Krasinski, as a director, moves it along very nicely. This movie is very relatable, whether you have a dysfunctional family or a not-so-dysfunctional family, or even the Strauss family. I really think you'll enjoy this, and I will be honest with you to tell you there are a couple of scenes in this movie that made me tear up as well. It is not a weeper, and it is not a terrible dysfunctional family movie like the rest of those. The Hollers is very funny. I give it an 8 out of 10.
Wow.
It's an indie movie that I would not have expected anything from. It surprised me. It got me emotionally and laughing out loud, and I strongly recommend it for you this weekend.
Really? Is this wide release too?
It's probably going to play art houses. It's probably going to make, what, $10 million this weekend?
Maybe.
But it doesn't have a huge budget.
It's not going to make 10 million.
Even though it's got that many people in it who you will recognize on the screen.
They probably all worked for next to nothing.
Right.
This was fun.
And I recommend it. If you're looking for a good, fine family movie to go to, this one... I would recommend. I'm not talking about a family movie like taking the kids to see. Yeah, it's not Finding Dory, but it's a kind of Plaza Frontenac, Tivoli kind of movie that I think hopefully will do well enough to.
Dad, what's a brain tumor?
I hope it'll do well enough so that John Krasinski gets more opportunities to do it.
I have a small brain on my tumor.
He made a pretty good movie here. And by the way, Dan, you were asking about the length of Snowden.
Yes.
This movie, The Hollers, 88 minutes.
Really?
Perfect length for a comedy.
Oh, yeah.
You're in, you're out in an hour and a half. Really, really good. So those are the three and a half, because we didn't do Bridget Jones's Baby, that we have to review for you this week. But there's more showbiz stuff still to come, including our predictions for the Emmy Awards, which are on ABC this Sunday night. We'll get to that in a moment here on the Big 550 KTRS. This song came to me as an earworm in the shower a couple of days ago. A song I had not heard in a couple of decades. And I mentioned it to Dan, and he immediately went, "Oh, yeah, I love that song!"
Oh, yeah.
Sausalito Summer Night by Diesel.
What a great song.
It made me go off on an iTunes store craze. I downloaded about 3 or 4 dozen songs from the 80s that were out about there, all by One Hit Wonders. Sausalito Summer Night.
Yeah.
That's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. That's Dan Strauss. That's Ian Geis. That's Colin Jeffrey. And the Emmy Awards are coming up on Sunday night. And I guess we should pick a couple of categories and the ones we think are going to win and the ones we think should win. I do think that there is one absolute lock for the Emmy Awards on Sunday night.
Okay.
And I only think this because you talked about it so much, and that is in the limited series category. They're not going to give it to Roots. Shit. They're not going to give it to Fargo. They're not going to give it to The Night Manager. They're not going to give it to American Crime. What are they going to give it to, Colin?
O.J. Simpson. The People versus O.J. Simpson.
Yes.
If that doesn't, I mean, it's nominated. I think it's only behind Game of Thrones for most nominations.
Mm-hmm.
They loved this. Everyone, I didn't talk to a single person who watched this. They even said, like, meh. The worst I heard is like, yeah, it's pretty good. I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
So
I liked it a lot.
See? But Dan, he gave it an 8 out of 10.
No, he gave it a 10 out of 10.
10.
He liked it a lot.
Yeah.
I couldn't watch it just because I didn't want to relive that whole thing. But I understand from you, too, and other people that it was terrific. And it's the lock of Sunday night.
Yes.
At the Emmy Awards. Let's look at the best drama series category. I'm amazed. Wasn't there a time when all award shows had five nominees in a category?
Yes.
When did they go to five, six, seven? There are seven shows.
They all need to make money, and they can make money by saying Netflix says, oh, House of Cards is nominated again. Come sign up for Netflix. Just $9 a month.
Yeah, but the TV Academy doesn't have to go along with that.
Yeah, they do. They all want to make money.
House of Cards is nominated, so is Homeland, The Americans, Better Call Saul, Mr. Robot, Game of Thrones, and Downton Abbey. What will win? What should win?
I think what should win is Mr. Robot. I think the second season is better than the first because it's even crazier.
But that hasn't aired yet. This is for the first season of Mr. Robot.
But I'm just, we say it hasn't. People watch them. That's what I think is sort of misleading about these. But yes, anyway, I think Game of Thrones will win.
Uh-oh. Again, he said anyway.
Anyway.
Oh, no, that's one.
Yeah.
Oh, three of them, and I won't be on next week.
I watched Mr. Robot about four episodes of the first season, and then I gave up on it because my head hurt.
That's fair.
It was just too confusing to follow what was going on with the various characters. Mm-hmm. I recognized it as a show of quality. I just couldn't take it anymore.
What do you want to win?
I would like Better Call Saul to win, because I think it's a terrific show. I watched House of Cards. It does not deserve to win.
No.
And I watched one episode last season of Homeland and gave up on the show forever. So, and I can't tell you anything about Game of Thrones, because I've never seen it.
The Americans, I will say, I haven't watched this current fourth season. It has gotten better every season, though. So I hear great things about this. It's an excellent show. I don't think enough people watch it.
Yeah, I watched the first season, and after that, I was done with it.
It got better.
That happens to me on a lot of shows.
Yeah.
One season and done. Best comedy series, you got Modern Family, Veep, Silicon Valley, Transparent, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, Blackish, and Master of None.
So I think the comedy should be funny, and Transparent should not be allowed in this category anymore.
I agree.
Because it makes you laugh, like, once a season.
I agree.
I do not think it's funny. I think Silicon Valley should win.
Absolutely.
I think Veep will win.
Yeah. Well, Veep has won every year, and Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Well, no, Transparent wins. Or no, that's a Golden Globe. Sorry. Transparent wins the Golden Globes every year.
And Julia Louis-Dreyfus always wins the Emmy.
Because she's so good as Selena Meyer.
She'll probably do it again. Best.
And can we just say Modern Family, stop being funny, like, I don't know, in the 2010?
Well, for me, it's entire run.
Yes.
I watched one episode. Nope, not funny. Not watching that again.
Yeah.
Best TV movie. This is one where I really hope that Bryan Cranston can go for the trifecta, because he did All the Way on Broadway and won a Tony Award for it. And then he did Trumbo, which was terrific right after that. And then he went back and did an HBO filmed version of the Broadway show, but they opened it up so it was actually a movie about LBJ. I would love to see All the Way win in the television movie category.
I think it has to. I have seen all of these.
Confirmation, Luther, Sherlock, The Abominable Bride, and A Very Murray Christmas.
Yes, I've watched all of these. Mm-hmm. Yes, the only two that should have been nominated are All the Way and Confirmation. And Confirmation isn't even in the same category as All the Ways.
Was that the Anita Hill movie?
And it was meh, but All the Ways, spectacular.
Yeah, and A Very Murray Christmas proved Bill Murray, not always funny.
No.
10 minutes of that show and you're done.
Yeah.
How about Variety Talk Series? The interesting one in this category, because you got John Oliver, you got James Corden, Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, Bill Maher, and also Jerry Seinfeld series, Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, which is on Crackle.
Yes.
Which nobody knows. Whenever I want to watch that series, and I do, I never go to Crackle. I just go to comediansandcarsgettingcoffee.com.
Yes.
And you can watch the most recent episode. He also does these single shots during the year where he takes
still
just
so good
outtakes from various other shows and puts together a two-minute montage. I still watch those every week.
Yeah.
I would love to see that win, because I'll be honest with you, except for John Oliver, I think the rest of those people put in meh years.
Can we say that it's called Variety Talk Series, and there's one talk show in this entire, and it's Jerry Seinfeld. There's no plot, there's no gimmicks. It's two people talking
for
18 to 20 minutes,
yes,
and it's funny.
Yes.
I agree with you. I think John Oliver will win. I think now that they've
No. James Corden will win.
Oh, no. I think they've gotten rid of Jon Stewart. I think John Oliver wins.
All right. Well, we'll have to disagree. I just think that James Corden, because of the carpool karaoke, is going to win.
I'll bet you whichever one loses can take next week off.
Okay.
Wow.
You're on. Because
next Friday?
Yeah. I'll tell you what. I'll bet you this. I'll bet you that none of the four of us will be in the studio next Friday.
Probably.
How much you want to put on that?
Any amount you want. one more category, reality competition program. You got The Amazing Race, which has won it, I don't know, 10 times. Dancing with the Stars, Project Runway, Top Chef, The Voice, and American Ninja Warrior. Here's my question. Who cares?
Ian does, because he watches Amazing Race every year.
Well, so do I.
And I will say...
Yeah, but I don't care if it wins an award or not.
And I will say, on this one, yeah. I will say either Dancing with the Stars or American Ninja Warrior. I think that will go.
I'm with Dan on American Ninja Warrior. I think that wins because it had several sort of viral moments in which, like, a woman finally completed it, or this... veteran or something. It had a lot of those moments that went viral, I think.
Speaking of bets, I was playing poker recently, and there was a guy at the table who was in his early 60s, and he had a bet with one of the younger guys at the table that within 2 years he would be able to make it into the finals of American Ninja Warrior. And the young guy at the table kept laughing every time the older guy brought this up. And I looked over at the guy who was in his early 60s, which is only a few years older than I am, and while he's in shape... There is no way he's American Ninja Warrior in shape. Mm-hmm. And in 2 years, he ain't going to get much better. Most of the people who go on there are like Navy SEALs who are like 31 years old, aren't they?
Yeah, even the women are.
But it's like a professional stuntman or I'm a rock climber. And then they can, oh, what can you do that's special? I can hang from my fingertips for 3 hours.
Yeah, by the way, this guy in his early 60s, who I'm talking about, dentist.
Okay.
Well. You're never going to hear. And now, let's welcome so-and-so DDS to American Ninja Warrior.
That's true. I pulled my cuspid out. Now I'm ready. I'm in shape.
I know it takes a lot to look down into that breath every day. Yes. I understand that that's courage, but you're not going to beat the American Ninja Warriors, especially when you're in your 60s. All right. A couple of other notes here. Netflix has given a 10-episode series order to She's Gotta Have It, which was a Spike Lee movie in 1986. It was the first thing he did 30 years ago. I think he financed it on his credit cards for like $175,000 with some other investors. Ended up making $7.1 million and launched Spike Lee's career. Now he's going to turn it into a 10-episode Netflix series, a half hour each time. If you haven't seen it, She's Gotta Have It was about a woman by the name of Nola Darling, who was in her late 20s, and her three boyfriends, one of whom was played by Spike Lee. The character was called Mars Blackman. You may remember that character from the Nike commercials that Spike Lee did for Michael Jordan. His Mars Blackman character was the one who said, "It's got to be the shoes. It's got to be the shoes." So that's going to
be good.
Thank you. That's going to be on Netflix sometime next year. And I know Frank will be upset to hear this. Doesn't he love the show Bloodline?
Yes.
I think so, yeah.
The third season is going to be on Netflix next May, because they've already made it, but they announced yesterday that will be the last season of Bloodline. Ooh. Bloodline is one of those series that, for me, one season was enough, because at the end of, spoiler alert, at the end of the first season, we find out that one of the main characters who drives the story dies.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the second season never really got going because of that. I watched a couple episodes, gave up on it, didn't need to go any further than that. I was not as big a fan of it as Frank was. But what does it mean when Netflix cancels a series? Considering they never give out viewership numbers.
I don't know that it means there's not a lot of viewers, but they seem very beholden to putting out quality television when it has their name on it. So I think that just means they're looking at it and saying, maybe the viewers are, but maybe the story's told. Mm-hmm. I think they give a lot of license because this actually leads to what I was, Narcos, which if you watch, just season two launched 2 weeks ago, I believe, and it just got renewed for seasons 3 and 4, which is astounding that they gave it 2 more.
This is the story of Pablo Escobar.
Yes, until you finish the second season, and then you're like, oh, I see why they gave it 2 more seasons. It's a great move. Ordinarily, I would hate this. Kudos to Netflix for doing this, just because it's going to be excellent, I think, for 2 more seasons. And the other thing is, this was sneaky. The first season, this is about Pablo Escobar and the DEA agents and Colombian government people trying to catch him. The first season is split about 50-50 between our two DEA agents, Pena and Murphy, and Escobar, building up his drug empire and these two trying to catch him. Anytime Escobar's in there, they're speaking, I think it's Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
Not Portuguese or something.
No, it's in Colombia, so it's Spanish.
So they're speaking Spanish, and it's subtitled.
Yes.
But it's about 50-50. The second season is 80 to 90% the story of Escobar, and it is subtitled. They found a sneaky way to make us watch. This isn't television for Americans. This is a Spanish language television program that happens to be very popular. I love that they did that. They sort of snuck it in there. It's very good. The second season is better than the first, and I'm making Ian watch it so we can talk about it next week, because I'm so excited to see
where
they
go. Not going to talk about it next week, because none of us are going to be here.
I'll call him. Ian and I are going to have a conversation.
I don't think you're allowed to do that. Are we allowed to talk off the air?
No. You're going
to
have your own show?
Yeah. No. Lose my number.
Are you watching it? Are you enjoying it?
Yes. I started last week, and I watched a few episodes. Yes. And I can tell it's going to get better. So.
All right. One last thing I want to mention. We talked a lot about Gene Wilder a couple of weeks ago after he died, and we talked about how Blazing Saddles and the producers were back in movie theaters. I mean, Blazing Saddles and Willy Wonka were back in movie theaters. On October 5th, Young Frankenstein is going to be back in movie theaters. You know, Fathom Events, they do these special events in movie theaters. They're going to do a showing of the movie, including a live intro from Hollywood by Mel Brooks, who's going to talk about his old friend Gene Wilder and give you a tour of the movie lot where the film was made. It is not coincidental that Mel Brooks has a book out now about the making of Young Frankenstein. So it all comes together there. Yes. And that's our showbiz stuff for this week on the Big 550 KTRS.